This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you again by the Friends of the Magic Word. Those are the ones who help us keep this podcast going through their financial assistance by being a patron or a donor. You can find out more about how that you can join the Friends of the Magic Word by just going to themagicwordpodcast.com and clicking on the tab that says Become a Friend of the Magic Word. This week, I wanted, before we get started, to mention something about a show which is playing that I would highly recommend. It's available in the United States on a platform called Hulu. That's H-U-L-U. And Hulu is a way of streaming television, network television, basically. But they posted a Hulu special recently that is a magic show called In and of Itself by Derek Delgadio. He had performed this apparently 552 times just off Broadway, and over that period of time, apparently that some of these were recorded, and as I understand it, that Stephen Colbert, who is a late-night talk show host in the U.S., had been so impressed, decided that after he saw this, he and his wife saw this live, that they thought that the two of them would actually produce this into a film, which I'm glad they did, which allows the rest of us across America to be able to see this fantastic show. I must say, perhaps it's the best movie that I have seen, perhaps the best magic show that I have seen. I don't know how to tell you about what it is. It's something that you have to experience. For those people who were lucky enough to have seen it live, that must have been just an awe-inspiring experience. But I'll tell you, by being able to go back and watch this time and again on video, it's just incredible. Again, highly recommended. What I'm about to tell you is not giving away anything as far as a plot point or anything, but it's just another way of how that you can enjoy this incredible film. There is a point in which that he will ask someone to leave the theater, then come back the next day. He refers to this gentleman as Tomorrow. He calls him Tomorrow. And towards the end of the play, whenever that he hands him a book and says, I want you to leave the theater and then come back tomorrow. And as he leaves, that's what I suggest, perhaps, that you actually stop the film. Pause it right there. And if you are watching this with someone else in your room, or even if you're watching it by yourself, I would suggest that you actually ask the other people around you or ask yourself the question, how will this end? As he tells Mr. Tomorrow, I want you to fill out the book on these pages with what you have seen and how you think the show will end. And then he gets to come back the next day to actually see what happened. But anyhow, if you will just kind of have that experience, it adds so much more, I think, if you just pause it right there and think to yourself, how could this end? And as a creative magician that you are, or you wouldn't be listening to this podcast, do you have perhaps some ideas of what you think and how you think that this might end? And those people who are around you, it's interesting to hear what their comments are. If you want to go just a step further, it'd be kind of cool if you actually wrote down those thoughts, and you could post them in the comments here on this podcast. If you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, we do have a comment section for each episode, and if you put something in that episode, it'd be kind of interesting to read what you and other people think how this was supposed to end. Well, anyhow, that's just a suggestion I think will give you another perspective and help you enjoy that film even more. Again, as you can tell, I just can't say enough superlatives about this wonderful show. Even if you don't have Hulu, I would recommend that it's worth going and getting a free trial for a week and just check it out. You might want to subscribe and keep it longer because you'll want to watch this on several occasions. Again, In and of Itself by Derek Delgadio. Congratulations, Derek. Man, what a show. What an accomplishment, and highly recommended on so many different levels. This week, we're going to visit with a longtime friend of mine, Mr. Ken Scott, who is coming in as the international president of the International Brotherhood of Magicians here soon. And he is also the one who puts together the Atlanta Harvest of Magic in Atlanta, Georgia. And that if you will hang around till the end of this program, I'll give you more information about how you might be able to win a free registration to the convention. So, but before we get to that part of it at the end, I want to tell you just a little bit again about who Ken is. He is a multiple award winner from Atlanta, Georgia, where he has performed not only for kids shows, but also doing corporate work as well. He is perhaps best known for doing children's shows. And that means, of course, birthday parties and library shows and school assemblies and the usual things in and of itself, to have a little callback there, that he's been doing for a long number of years and is well known throughout the country, at least, and perhaps the world, because of some of the things that he has been teaching in his lectures and DVDs about children's shows. But he also, again, does corporate work, and he knows a thing or two about magic conventions, all of which he will discuss a little bit here on this week's episode. So please welcome my friend, Mr. Ken Scott, here on The Magic Word. Today I have with me a longtime friend, someone I used to work with back in the old days of podcasting, before that I actually had the Magic Word podcast, and we're going to get into some of that and a lot more. He is someone who is also the incoming international president of the Society of America, the International Brotherhood of Magicians. Don't want to get the SAM mixed up over there, that although he's a member of the SAM, but he's actually on the board and is the vice president of the International Brotherhood of Magicians currently. And he also is a multiple winner of Atlanta's Magician of the Year, as well as many other kinds of things. And perhaps you might know him best then of having watched some of his videos and learned from him as being just one of the top kid show magicians around the country, if not the world. And very nice guy, somebody that if you don't know my friend, you will know him very well after the end of this episode. So please welcome my good buddy, Ken Scott. Hey there, Ken. How are you?
Hey, how are you, Ben? Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad.
I was expecting. I'm like, I get to go talk to Santa today. This is great.
I've got to learn to do more of the
host. Listen at you. You've got it down pat, man.
Well, I was talking with someone who was giving me a little bit of a critique, and they were saying, yeah, you need more hoes, lend fewer ha's. I guess. If I'm going to be doing a virtual Santa Claus kind of a thing. Exactly. And I have been letting my beard grow out a little bit so that it looks a little bit longer like Santa's actually than the one that I normally have when people see me. That's going to be a little bit more trimmed and everything. Well, I was going to ask you about, by the way, the fact that you have won the Atlanta Magician of the Year award on multiple occasions. How many times have you been a winner?
I have won it 4 times over the last 2 decades.
We are equal partners. Same here. I won a Houston Magician of the Year for 4 times also. But your trophy is bigger than our trophy.
Yeah, I like to call it, you know, it's like the biggest, ugliest, beautiful award, I call it, because it is so, you know, like bowling it. You won the bowling league tournament and you get to take it home with you. And I bring it home and my wife goes, where is that going? So it's one of those things I love to keep. And again, it's the most ugliest, most beautiful trophy ever. And then when it's time to go, she's got it all cleaned up, ready to send off to whoever gets it next. So
kind of like a Stanley Cup. Yeah. It kind of is a traveling trophy.
It's kind of like that. But I mean, even the Stanley Cup looks a little good, you know. This one here is, I mean, the great thing about our award here is that it really is just, I hold it, and I'm a big history buff when it comes to magic, and I look at the names on there and how far it goes back to the 70s, and I see names on there, the people that I saw of, you know, as a young kid, and so I'm in awe of the names are on this trophy, you know, much like when I see, I wish people would take the necklace for the IBM president more serious, because that you look on that and you see all the names on the necklace for that thing around the neck, and I think that's just a great piece of history that's been around for a long time. So just like that, yeah. So
well, that's very true. I don't think people
really recognize or know what that is unless you are from England, because I believe that was what it was based on, that many right. of the mayors of different villages and burghs over in England will wear this ceremonial type of necklace that does embed the names or have the names engraved of previous mayors, as I understand it. And the same thing right. here. This was, I think, during Jerry Schnepp's administration or sometime around that or before that, I believe. I don't remember what year that would have been.
Would you think it was in the late 80s that was started, do you think? Because someone said it might have been June Horowitz who might have been the first one to get the chain. And I said that. Sounds right. I thought it went back further than that, but I could be wrong.
No, I think that you're spot on. I'm pretty sure that it was around that time, certainly. I know it was in the 80s. I know it wasn't the 70s, and I know it wasn't the 90s, so it might have been then in the late 80s. And
late
June
80s,
may have indeed
yeah.
been the right one. And we always laughed about Jerry Schnepp wearing it to bed.
That explains why it's broke a lot, I guess, out here.
He was a great guy. But anyhow, yeah, that is something that whenever that people attend the IBM conventions that, and you see the current president, oftentimes that he will wear this, sometimes just around the convention, but certainly during formal events when we have dinners and things like that. But if you have an opportunity to go up, you should inspect that a little bit closer. That's good advice there, Ken, to make sure that they actually do read it and see some of the names of the people in the past. Years ago, I was in charge of the regalia committee, and they had put me in charge of that. And the idea was that I was the first committee chairman for that. And we had a booth, and the idea was I wanted past presidents to man the booth. So that when people came by, they would be buying regalia, hats and sure. whatever, stationery from people who they had not met, but they could meet, who were part of the IBM's history. And that right. way that different people, so I had people scheduled, whoever was the past presidents that were going to be there for that convention. So each year that's what they did. And anyhow, they no longer do that, but I thought that was kind of a good way of kind of a meeting and greeting the history, some of the past presidents, you know, the IBM.
Well, I know that the IBM chain is kind of made fun of. I know I told Stan when it's my turn, I said, I'm going to wear this chain all up and down the aisles of your convention at Magic Live. And he says, I know you're not. And I think that it's, I wish people would take it more serious. I think it's a neat honor. I think being the president was truly a great thing. And now I think it's kind of like people say, I'm going to be the president for the IBM. And they go, well, why? So it's kind of lost that zen a little bit. Like, why is this guy wanting to be the president, and why would you want to take that on? So it's not quite as it used to be. I mean, to this day, I can still remember my first IBM convention in Kansas City. And I want to say this might have been like 83, 84, maybe.
Okay.
It was when Weinberg was the president. And
right.
It was just a huge convention, and I remember him walking in a tuxedo, and I'm like, that's the president. And I was mm-hmm. like in awe, and to this day, I tell him, I say, every time I see you, I'm in awe, just because you were the president at the time. And I just thought back then the presidents were a big deal, I thought. So.
And they would wear that with dignity and honor, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, I just thought, sometimes I think becoming president now is kind of like, all right, it's your turn, or it's like, why do you want to do this thing? Anyway, I like to see if we, you know, get some stuff done and really make it, you know, be a respected thing. Almost like I say that about kid shows, too. You know, kid shows. I tell you, when we're doing shows, kid shows are there's probably 90% of people that get kid shows. If you're a kid show or family show person, kids are going, we're the first one they're going to see as far as magic. You know, so when David Copperfield or Chris Angel gets kids at their show, chances are they've seen somebody like myself do a school show, do a library show, do a birthday party. So I think the family show guys have got to take that stuff seriously, because it is a big thing if we're the first one they're exposed to as far as a type of performer or performance of magic. So
I hadn't really thought about that. That is interesting, in which that we are their what would you say, introductory drug, I guess, or in which that people, particularly as a child, would see a magician, and they will remember that the rest of their lives, and they will have an opinion of what they think about magic,
yeah,
good or bad, based upon that first impression that they had.
Yeah.
So in the future, whenever they are in corporate America and they want to hire a magician, they're going to say, "Ooh, golly, I had a bad one whenever I was bar mitzvahed or whatever, you know, and so, or my birthday party, or I went to someone else's and it was not fun, or it was scary like a clown or something." So,
yeah,
that's a very good point.
It's a respect thing. I think that kids show performers are starting to get, in fact, I like to call them family show performers instead of kids show, because mm-hmm. kids show almost sounds like it's a babysitting type job. Because I think my show,
and sometimes
I know
it
my
is.
Show can play. Yeah, sometimes my show, I know my show can play for families, and I'd prefer to have families in the audience. That way I can play off both ages. But yeah, I just, you kind of wish that the art of magic would take, you know, the family show market really serious and say, hey, in respect. And I think it's starting to get there. It's just taking a long, long time, you know? So, but yeah. So a lot of guys like, I just find it funny that some guys are having to come back into the market and do kid shows, when maybe corporate is kind of locked down for the moment and they're having to do kid shows. So they do come back. People do come back to kid shows.
But do you also think that perhaps that is an introduction into magic, that magicians will go into birthday parties and things because that's where they can, not so much to make money, because most people who are doing this kind of a thing are part-time professionals, or they don't even consider themselves as part-time professionals. It's kind of like, hey, this is a hobby and I make a little bit of money and it pays for lunch, yeah, or something, or birthday gifts or something. And before long, they realize that they can actually start paying for their own magic tricks that they're buying and putting these things in. The more parties you start working, and they are doing more and more, because the kids will say, hey, I want him for my party. And of course that just expands. The question I have then, do you think that that is kind of an introduction to magic for magicians to go into the birthday party market?
Yeah, maybe. You know, I think that it definitely could be. I think I remember talking to, let me name drop here. I was talking to Teller one night after mm-hmm. His show, and he was asking us what kind of magic that, you know, we did. And I said, yeah, we, you know, do schools and libraries. And he went back and told us a story about, this probably happened in the 70s. I don't know when. He said he remembers doing a blue and gold banquet, and he said how he was just, it was the worst show. And said he, at that moment there, he had total respect for any guy who was doing kid shows, because it's such a hard way, you know, with kid shows. When you're doing a kid show, you can't, you know, we all love script. We all like going off a script. But in a kid show, you've got to learn how to zig and zag, because a lot of times it's not going to go the way you planned. Something happens over here, and you got to veer this way and go this way. So you got to switch around. So I think maybe you're right. I think a lot of guys, but I do respect the guys who know that that's not their forte, and mm-hmm. but they're not coming in it just to do it for the money. So if guys go, you know, I don't like kids, or I don't do well with kids, and they don't do it, then I respect that even more, because that's, you know, I don't find myself to be a great trade show magician. I've been in trade show businesses before and done them, but I don't find that to be my thing, so I don't really seek them. But,
mm-hmm. right.
You know, there are guys who want to do every gig they're out there. I'm not good at funerals either. You know, I get hired at funerals, Scott, and that.
You don't put the fun in funeral?
I don't put the fun in funeral.
I think you're right that it's important to try a little bit of everything, and I think that most magicians will eventually find that slot, or that room, as Eugene Berger would talk about in the House of Magic,
yeah,
of whether that it might be in stage magic, in illusions, in dove magic, you know, animals of some sort, or whether it's going to be just cards or coins, close-up, kid shows, escapes,
yeah,
mental. It's a huge house, obviously. And I think it's important early on to try a little bit of everything and find kind of where your niche is. And I think there are a lot of people who then will try to advertise thinking, hey, I'm a jack of all trades and I can do it all, but they're really not the master of any, as it turns out. So you just need to kind of focus whatever that your interest is, and if you don't like that, then refocus or set your sail to a different direction.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, listen, to each their own. They got to, you know, people got to make money if that's what they do, but
oh, sure.
I think for the better of magic, I think find your thing, and then, you know, if it's not your thing, don't do it for the sake of the art.
Yeah, that's true. Now, you have been doing kid shows, I know, for decades. Well, you said since the 70s or 80s, approximately.
I actually started doing shows, I guess, when my mom got me my magic kit when I was 8. So I started doing shows, you know, like for little to no money, went back in probably the late 70s, early 80s. Mm-hmm. Then went to my very first magic convention, which was the Atlanta Harvest. That was my first exposure to a convention.
Was that with the Maney?
So,
Jim and Diane Maney?
Yeah, that was Jim and Diane Maney. Mm-hmm. And that was my first convention going to and being exposed to. And then in doing so, what I did over the years is that I would I became a member of our IBM. I was like 12 years old becoming a member of the IBM. And I would go to our local Ring 9 of Atlanta IBM. And that's where I met Doty, who really just took me underneath my wings for all those years. And then Dan Garrett was the first one who sold me a magic trick when I went to a shop at 8 years old. He sold me Stratospheres and, get this, bananas. I wonder why he sold me bananas. Maybe it was because he was making them. And to this day, I remind him those bananas, when I was 8, did not fold in my hand properly to hide them. So I think he was after the sale. But he sold me those. Yeah, so, you know, I look back at those days and becoming a member. Then I actually, in doing something, being part of Ring 9, Daytona Magic came through and did a lecture. And I met Harry and Irv and became good friends with them. Now, at that time, my parents were divorced, but my dad worked at Eastern Airlines. And so I met them, and I flew. Get this. I was 12 years old, and I flew down for spring break to help work at their shop one spring break. I got on an Eastern Airline plane, flew down to Daytona. And I think I look back at this and I go, what was my mom thinking? She just stuck a 12-year-old on a plane to go work with these guys in Daytona who she really didn't even know.
These magicians, yeah.
It wasn't like I had a cell phone that I could just pick up the phone and call. So I look back at those days and went, what was she thinking? But I did learn a lot. I mean, I was working at Daytona Magic for nearly 5 years, all through my high school years. I was working there with Chad Long. And we really learned the magic shop industry business. So that was a lot of fun, a lot of fun.
Not only how to demo, but also because you're doing these over and over. It's like working at a restaurant where you're doing the same tricks kind of over and over.
Completely.
Yeah, you learn
completely.
A lot.
I don't know if I was the best demonstrator. I didn't really like. I mean, Harry's a great demonstrator. He just lost a great one the day with Al Cohen.
Cohen. Yeah,
he was probably the best. I mean, you look back now, you got Mark Mason, you got guys like that who are just phenomenal demonstrators.
Oh my God.
But you want to buy everything. I never was quite that way. Harry would kind of push me off and say, hey, try to sell these things. And I would try to find a nice routine and sell them. So, yeah. In fact, it was where Harry was the one where we were at a convention, and it might have been that first IBM convention when you did the registration, because my name is Ken Scott Weisenbaker. Mm-hmm. And he said, are you going to be Ken Scott? We're going to drop Weisenbaker. So it's where at that moment when I was 14, when the Weisenbaker got dropped off and I just became Ken Scott.
So much easier to remember.
Yeah. And so that's when I dropped that, and that's when I became Ken Scott. So that's it was all because Harry said, you're not going to be Weisenbaker. You're going to be Ken Scott. So that's an interesting story for you.
So he was the one who kind of, in a way, named you.
Yeah,
your stage name.
Yeah, he did. I guess he just says Weisenbaker is going to be too long, because his name is Harry Allen Gurish. And so he dropped his last name. So he's Harry Allen. So I think he just said, we'll just use your first and middle name. And it just stuck. And that's what I've always been with. And now I could imagine not having that name. When I go to parties, it's funny. Kids don't call me Mr. Ken. Kids don't call me Mr. Scott. They call me Ken Scott. Hey, Ken Scott. So that's all I ever hear is, hey, Ken Scott. So it's not Ken. It's not. It's always, hey, Ken Scott.
So well, I think that is kind of important that you have a name that is going to be easy to remember like that. I mean, just like David Kay went with Silly Billy, and I was asking him about the evolution of his name. And it was interesting because he was saying that he actually put it to the children and actually had them vote on, by going to different parties and things, that he would say, here are some suggestions. And they all tended to focus in on Silly Billy's name.
Well, I will say I've worked really hard over the years to make sure that my parties or any event that I did, that they know who did the performance. When my kids were younger, my wife would take them to birthday parties, and there'd be a clown or there'd be another entertainer at these parties. I go, who was it? And they would always say, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And so I always made a point to make sure that when I still do parties, that I want them to know that it was Ken Scott. I want them to walk away as guests of the party. I want them to walk away going, they saw Ken Scott. They didn't see just a magician. So I really, really work really hard on that. And that's a big, big thing of mine, that they, if the show sucked, they're going to know it was Ken Scott. If it was good, they're going to hopefully know it was Ken Scott. So that's my thing.
Do you brand your name during the show? I mean, I have put my name on the front of my table, so it says ScottWells.com.
Oh, yeah. It's on the front of the table, but I also do crazy things like I'll reintroduce myself 20 times with the name. You know, as a kid comes up, I go, "Hi, Ken Scott." And by the time I've done this five or six times, a kid goes, "No, we know you're Ken Scott." Okay? So it's that kind of thing. And then even my sign has a bit on there where when I touch my Ken Scott sign, my logo sign, it turns on and off. The music turns on and off.
Oh.
So they focus in on just my logo, which says Ken Scott. And they touch that button, which I'm just using a remote switch.
Yes.
And the music stops, you know, so they're reading my sign kind of before the show even starts. So that's kind of, they're already, if they can read, they're seeing Ken Scott. So that's kind of a nice little tip for you if you're doing that. And if you don't have a good name, use my sign and my name, Ken Scott. You're welcome to use my name if you want to.
Because it's an easy one. Yeah, it goes back again.
Or Scott Wells.
When Steve Shaw was wanting to change his name to Vanacek, and he was thinking of different kinds of names, and the reason was that a lot of times the people would come up, and after they've introduced, or getting ready to introduce him, and please welcome, here's our magician or mind reader for this evening, here he is. He couldn't remember Steve Shaw, but he said Vanacek seemed to have a good ring to it. And I think that it's important. If I find something, it may not be your name, but something that could be a catchphrase that they would remember you for that. I mean, I use, for an example, magic water from Zanzibar. I have a Lota bowl, and that's my thing. And I mean, my picture at the Magic Castle is a picture of me pouring out of a Lota bowl. And I remember on more than one or two occasions when I've seen someone on an elevator or in the street or something, and they'll look at me and they'll say, "Magic water from Zanzibar," right? They can't remember Scott Wells, but the name Zanzibar, I guess, is something that is in their minds. Like, you're the guy that did the magic water from Zanzibar.
And say, yes, it's Scott Wells.
Yeah. It's Ken Scott.
You know, Scott, I don't know. Do you remember the time? I know you were there. It was the convention. It was a TAOM convention, and I want to say it might have been San Antonio. Mm-hmm. This was the year that Bev Bergeron, I remember this the other day because when Bev passed, sadly, Bev was there that year, and there was a kid, it was the first night Bev was on, and he was emceeing, and there was a light that was on stage that had to go, I think, green or red to let him know they're ready.
Okay.
And something happened with this light when Bev was on that it just would not go off, and Bev just got out of script, and it went on for 15 minutes. He's like, "Just turn the light off!" You know, and then I remember that night the audio went out and Oscar had to do his entire act with no microphone.
Right.
And so while this is going to my mind, I'm going, all right, I'm on the next night as MC and I'm thinking, wow, you know, I hope this didn't happen to me. So that was the night where I brought that little girl up on stage.
Yes. Oh, that was classic.
And it became say hello to the microphone. And that whole bit was not, you know, It wasn't written. I didn't write it. Just the way she tiptoed and kind of talked in the mic, and it just was so hilarious. And I've tried to mimic that whole thing, and I can't get it again. Can't get that same moment again. And that was, man, that was 10 to 12 minutes with a hat tear.
Yes. but it was
that
so
was
real.
A fun
also.
Night.
That was what we think about it. It was real. It was genuine. It was you, and that you were in the moment. You weren't staying with the script, which I think a lot of people may have something in mind, and if they do try to improvise a little bit, that they couldn't do it as professionally as what you did. That was memorable. I remember that particular convention. First of all, Oscar, in later years, would still have callbacks in which he would pretend like the microphone wasn't working or something.
Yes.
He said, "What am I, still at TAOM 2000 or in San Antonio or whatever?" But yeah, that was an ongoing gag for many years with him. But I remember the next night, thing that you did with that little girl was a classic. And I don't know if that was recorded or not, but I wish you
did. Yeah, I've got it.
Oh, do you?
I've got it.
Okay.
I've got it. And it's funny. It pops up on my memories about every year. And I'm like, this is just I even lectured on it one time saying this is stuff that, you know, because I knew that I was going to go on that night, that I was going to use that light as a prop, you know, the one that cuts on and off backstage.
Right.
And I wanted to use that as some sort of prop that night, because it was a night before, it was giving Beb some problems because they weren't cutting it off. So I knew that's all I had on my board of ideas. And that's where it went with that particular trick. And it just happened to be Ice. McDonald was on before me. Mm-hmm. And if you know, he was doing his full act with the Ice, and it was pretty messy. So it took some time for them to get that cleaned up. So that bit went a little longer than I had anticipated. They said 5 minutes, and it was nearly 10. But it was funny. So yeah, you just never know. You'd be prepare yourself for those moments, but sometimes you just can't prepare yourself enough for those things. You know as good as I do.
I do, and I think it's important to be ready for that. And that fortunately or unfortunately, that a lot of times that only comes with experience. That you, if you are in those moments of being able to handle the volunteer properly, and making the best of it without making fun of the person or the situation. If there are some obvious things
Absolutely.
That you can do, it's important that you're always honoring that person and making them look good. You're just the facilitator kind of to bring everyone along for a ride so this person looks great. And I think a lot of times that some magicians might find the easy out by doing the easy jokes that would be the ones that would be demeaning and putting people down.
Right. Yeah, I think learning from guys like Tom Mullica and Dave mm-hmm. Williamson and Chad Long, who I just love watching them work. You just don't. When I watch those guys work, I feel like I don't see the same act every show. I feel like they're going to do a new act. And I thought they were always they would just zig and zag, you know, and mm-hmm. they would never. It was a lecture on improv almost with those guys. And I just love it. So I love doing that kind of stuff. If there's a moment, obviously, I think as performers, we all have stuff in the back of our mind. If something happens, we can pull it out and use it. But, you know, to be able to zig and zag and go off script, I think is a great thing. If you're able to pull that off, it makes you look good. It makes the audience feel good. And it brings you back.
That's why that I really enjoy sitting around and talking with magicians late at night in my sessions. A lot of times, even when I was younger, and still to this day as I'm older, the most enjoyable ones are not necessarily when we're sitting around and exchanging card tricks, but when we're spending hours just chatting and telling jokes. Because these are things that kind of go into my memory bank and think, hey, I can pull this out and use this at the appropriate time. I remember so many nights, speaking of the TAOM, Texas Association of Magicians Convention, of being up until the early hours with Roger Klaus, and there'll be maybe six of us right. or so at the table. And I often wondered when he slept, and I finally realized he was taking naps during the daytime because I was up. I just never got any sleep back in those days. But sometimes it wasn't until 3 or 4 in the morning before someone would actually pull out a deck of cards and start to do something. But they were telling jokes and just kind of improvising some other kinds of humor and you know, just having a conversation about, well, what kind of word is funny? What's a funny fruit? You know, banana, a kumquat. I mean, what? Anyhow, different kinds of things where you actually learn about humor, and those are the important parts, I think, of making your act entertaining and not just mystifying. Because obviously, as a magician, our job is to mystify, but it's overall still to entertain, I believe, which includes, I think, if you're a speaking magician, to have humor.
Yeah. Well, I think, Scott, you nailed it right there. And I think you know this, that some, even to this day, convention, some of the best part of the convention is that late night. I mean, mm-hmm. that you could pay a convention fee and get your money's worth just by hanging out in the lobby, just jamming with people and doing what you're saying. I mean, heck, that's how David Kaye and myself and our late Bruce Bray started KGB, for the Family Show Performer. We would invite 10 people. And we basically just wanted to create the lobby. We wanted to create what was happening in the lobby, or when we went back to our room and just jammed, we wanted to recreate that. Mm-hmm. And that's what our KGB was all for that many years that we were on doing those things. So yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, that, going to a convention, and I tell people, even the young kids, I said, you got to go to a convention. And I had one kid that came to my convention and didn't understand why Finney was over there talking to JC. He goes, who is JC? Who is Dodie? And I said, these guys over there, you should just go pull up a chair and don't say a word. Just listen. I said, because you can get a history lesson from these guys. And I say, it's great to learn from these people who we've all been on top of their shoulders. And I said, you need to know this guy. You need to know why he's known to magician and respected and loved, and just take it in. I mean, that's what I did. And I still do that. I'll be a fly on the wall in many of these things. So I agree, Scott, that the late night jam sessions are probably the best part of a convention. And you know, I think you've seen us at IBM. We try to recreate that so it actually happens. But more times than not, those late IBM jam, or any jam for that matter, at a convention, is very organic. You know, nothing's planned. You just say, hey, we're going to meet up at the bar. We're going to meet up here. If you start planning, then it takes the whole thing out. If you make it an event, then it's not as good. It's got to be an organic thing, and you know that.
Well, that's true. Well, that's a lot of what I'm trying to do with these podcasts, of having something in which that it seems as if that, well, as we're talking, that people hopefully will be learning things from what we have to say. It's just from and benefiting from our combined experience and years of performing and whatnot in different directions, of whether that it's going to be talking about trade shows or kid shows or cruise ships or college shows or whatever that it might be, so that people who are listening to these podcasts are kind of like fly on a wall, that they're eavesdropping on a conversation between a couple of friends, as we are, and then along the way, as we're talking, that there are nuggets, hopefully, of wisdom that they might be able to take to improve their own magic as well. Talking about the sessions and the importance of that, I remember Joshua Jay and Andy Gladwin for their Magi Fest there in Columbus, that they believe that the once you walk in the door of the convention, the experience begins. And the whole thing is not just the lectures and the shows, et cetera, and the dealers and whatnot, but also the actual conversation area or congregating area in the lobby, that's part of the experience as well. And that I know they really don't like people just kind of dropping in and not buying a registration and just hanging out in the lobby, because they're taking space away from others who have paid to hang out in the lobby, because that is a great experience. I remember, for an example, that the last one when I was there with Guy Hollingworth and Juan Tamariz, and they were holding court there, Jamie and Swiss and others who were, it was just kind of neat to watch these guys and to listen to what they were having to say in a conversational thing in which you were almost a fly on the wall kind of a thing. So those things are important and do have value, and some people recognize that, and they will go and hang out at the convention even though they haven't paid the registration. Much to the chagrin, as I said, I know of Josh, because he was saying, these guys should be paying. They're learning a lot right here.
No, they should be. They should be, because, again, the convention really takes part in that lobby late night, and some guys can take advantage of that. And, you know, it, listen, you know as well as I do, these conventions are not cheap to put on. And, you know, if you can make a couple thousand dollars, then you're doing pretty well. But, you know, for the most part, these conventions break even in a lot of cases.
Yeah, the financial dynamics have changed completely from the way they used to be. I'm sure that people still, some might think that the people who are putting on these conventions are just rolling in dough. No, they're not.
No.
And you're a perfect example of that, because you've taken over talking about the Atlanta Harvest of Magic. The Manies had done that, and then they kind of stopped for a while, and then you kind of pick it up, and it's been running successfully, so under your tutelage.
Yeah, so what happened, you know, obviously I was always working with Diane and Jim, kind of in the background doing things for them when they were running it. And not to mention, I just have, you know, there's a place in my heart for them, because at M&M Magic, that's where I went and bought my first Magic trick, you know, 1978. So I just, I you know, have a place for them. And Jim was the guy who sold me sponge balls and nickels to dimes, and it was kind of that, you know, I'm like, I want to do Magic, so... Yeah, so once I started, and then once I got out of it, that's where I met my friend Monty Johnson, who's a big tech guy, and he would help me, and he's helped me tremendously even this year as well. And he's always got things, he's very good wisdom as far as tech-wise stuff. But so then once Diane and Jim stopped doing it, we would do the SEAM every now and then, you know, because that convention would jump, kind of like the TAOM. It would jump around from city to city
that's
in the Southeast.
Southeastern Association of Magicians.
Right, right. And so it may go up to the Carolinas. It may jump down to, you know, anywhere in Georgia somewhere. But it always did fairly well in Atlanta. And so I took over one year because our club was going to do it, and they were having some problems in the club that year. And I just took over it, and it was really my first jab at doing a convention without any help. You know, I had some club members helping me, but kind of calling the shots. And it turned out pretty well, I got to say. Everything that I thought about came to life. It really worked. And I love conventions because they're like a big jigsaw puzzle. You put all this on the wall and you go, okay, I want this, I want this, I want this. And when it all comes at the end, you as a convention organizer or chairman, you don't really get to see it, okay? But if it comes together, that's the prize for myself. You know, that's what the prize is for a Stan Allen, if everything comes together as he had envisioned it. So I
started. You never know until
the
end, though.
You don't know until the end, right? Yeah, but you kind of get an idea early on if it's working. But so then once that stopped, I said I was making some money for the club, which I was grateful to give the club back some money. But I'm like, I'm working a lot. And my wife would go, you're working a lot on this. And she says, why don't you do your own? And I went, oh, that's my own money. I don't want to do that. So but I tried it. And that's when I took over the Harvest again on my own dime. And that was frightening, you know, to go sign a contract and it say on there, I'll be on the hook for like $21,000 if we don't meet this number. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't something I could go, all right, club, here's your bill. it was my bill.
It was the Ken Scott bill.
It was a Ken Scott bill, and it worked. So, and I got a great deal at this hotel. My convention is, I would say, on the smaller side. I think the convention that I do, again, me and Stan has talked about this, because his is the extreme opposite of mine. But mine, you really can hang and jam with people. From the, you know, we have 158 people there, and they can really just hang and jam with everybody in the Stars of Magic, hang out and jam with you as well. It's not something, you know, Scott, we go to Magic Live, I may not even see you until that night of the banquet, the last night. Yeah. So there are some great strengths to that, but I think the strength of my little convention, The Harvest, is that you get to hang, you get to be a part, it becomes a family. You meet new friends, and I like that. I like that aspect of it. It means I can't make as much money. I can go to another hotel and get more rooms, bigger stage, but then you start to lose that, you know, that very intimate part of the convention that I think plays well for us here in Atlanta. So, yeah, so what I've done is that I can't afford to do it every year. So on Atlanta Harvest, I only do it every other year. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of been pretty good. You know, I've kind of like, you know, when Richard doesn't do his in Orlando for Genie, I'll kind of do mine that year.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know best. You ran the convention thing. Are there more conventions now than there were, or are there less? I think you know the answer to that, don't you?
I would like to think I do. I have certainly an opinion on that. Let me go back for just a second on the Atlanta Harvest. That I have to say that I agree that it is a very congenial and friendly convention, and one that does allow you time to really talk with everybody. The reason that I went to my first Atlanta Harvest was because Terry Seabrook and I think it was Joe DeLion and Sly Deeney were performing.
Oh, now you know what that was, Scott? That was the 10th anniversary.
Okay.
And that was a great convention. That was, you had Del Rey there that year as well.
Yep, Del Rey. Mm-hmm.
You had Terry Seabrook, you had a young Michael Amar. You had Harry Lorraine, you had, there were so many people that were on that for that 10th anniversary. And it was right there in downtown at the Stadium Hotel right beside the Fulton County Stadium. So, in fact, Gary Plants just posted a picture just the other day of Harry Lorraine at that convention. We were all like, what year is that? And he said it was 84.
Well, I'd forgotten what year that was, but that was whenever I got to be good friends with Terry Seabrook, that our friendship went on until his death, that we even had a cat that was named Seabrook after him, and he used to stay at our house whenever he would come through.
Wow.
When we lived in Houston and Dallas and even in Omaha, in different places, and that a quick story about that is every time that Terry would stay in our home, we moved or were transferred or something within 6 months. We moved from that house. It's like if we wanted to leave, then we would invite him to stay at our home. And that happened on 4 or 5 separate occasions. It wasn't like just like once or twice. It happened frequently. It's kind of funny. Anyhow, that was a great convention. I remember also, again, with Sly Deeney doing his linking ring routine in his Matador outfit up on stage and everything like that. That was one of his last performances. Of course, Del Rey. And that was just a tremendous convention. But I remember, again, being in a back seat with it was cramped with my wife and I and Terry Seabrook. And we were going over to the Viceroy. Where was it that had the hamburgers and the onion rings? Those ladies make the onion rings. The Victor.
Is that the Varsity?
Varsity. Start with the V. That was it. The Varsity. Yeah.
Yep.
That was somebody locally in Atlanta said, hey, we need to go over there. And so
it was far from where that hotel was. But yeah, that was a convention where Del Rey was doing his little, you know, mouse. And they said, hey, kid,
hey, Willie, we're waiting on you,
sit
Willie.
Sit right here. Yeah. They said, kid, sit right here in the corner because we need to videotape this. So I had to sit there on the corner of the table so they could shoot the camera over my head because I was short. And I went, why? Even as, I think I was 13. Even then, I knew that this was great. This was great stuff that I was about to get to. So, that was sensational. And that was a fun convention.
And you never know. And that's what I'm going to say, that for people who haven't attended conventions, and I recognize that it is an expense, certainly, because you have the expense of traveling. You have the expense then of the hotel, the expense of the registration. And, of course, you're going to be buying some food and drink while you're there, plus any tricks that you're going to be buying. You're talking about potentially a few thousands of dollars, you know. But if you're going to be going to put some money into a vacation during the year anyhow, that this would be something that typically they have things then for the spouse and the children and everybody to do. But if you're a single person or a young magician, that I know it's difficult, but if you happen to live near an area then where they're having a convention, then I would highly recommend putting together just a couple of your friends and saying, hey, share a room and we'll drive up there together or something, and support the organizers and the rest of the magicians, because you never know what's going to be happening. I know that Jeff McBride and so many others are talking about, and Lance Burton and others say, to enter contests, because that the people who are the other contestants with you, win or lose, they will become lifelong friends, because you've kind of been thrown into battle with each other. But you never know until you actually get into that situation. Likewise with a convention, when you get into an area and start sessioning with these other guys, or you start making some new friends, and you come back the next year, you start to see some people that become lifelong friends.
That's just it. You nailed it, Scott. I was going to say that same thing, that these conventions, they become, you meet new family, you meet new great friends that you keep up with. And that's really what it was. I mean, if you think about the Winter Carnival, that's what that convention was all about. It really was just go there and just to see people from a year before that you haven't seen, and you go to see your extended family. So that's what these conventions are. I think they really do that. And, I like to support that. I'll keep doing it with the Harvest as long as I can. But it's an every other year joint effort on my part to do that. So.
Well, going back then to address your question as to whether we are seeing more or fewer conventions, I think really that it's net even. And I was saying, people were saying that we seem to be seeing more conventions, and I said no, because some have been falling out. In other words, once that they reached the 75th convention, it's like the same group of people have been doing it for a long time. Well, one example, let's say like the Redcoats, who were doing the Magi Fest for so many years, and with Jeff Hostetler and other people, and they passed it on. Ron Spangler took it over, and then after a while, they kind of languished, and then finally Josh and Andy picked it up and went in a completely different direction with it. Still the Magi Fest, but handled a little bit differently. But for a couple of years, I don't think that it was held, or if it was just not put together, certainly the way that it is now. But my point is that there are some other conventions that kind of have gone the way that they're realizing that they're the same group are putting it on year after year. And unless, for an example, the SEAM and the TAOM, as you were saying, and the PCAM and other conventions kind of rotate among different cities and different states in a region. So this way that it's not going to be all on the same club all the time and kind of, wear them out, so to speak.
Right.
So I think that
I do know the SAM, that has not happened since I stopped doing it. So that maybe just have hit that a roadblock. It's not happening anymore anywhere in the South. No one's picked it up. No club has offered to do it. Mm-hmm. So I applaud the TOM keeps going and doing it. So you guys are still doing it in Texas. But
I remember Charles Pecor was another fella that used to do that. Is he still around, or do you know?
No, he passed about a month ago.
I did not know that.
Yeah, Charles passed about a month ago. Great guy. I just loved listening to his take on things. I remember him being at one of my lectures or shows, and the way I had people positioned on stage to do this particular trick, it was a late night session. He goes, hey, if you did this, it would be better if you had him stand like this. And he was completely spot on the way I had him lined up, in a straight line, shoulder to shoulder facing the audience. And I had to give each person an item out of a bag. And he says, if you put him in a V and you in the middle of the V, the focal point would still be on you, but you never have to turn your back and you can still see everybody down the line without having to stretch and been around. And he was right. So this V format was very strong for this particular piece of magic that I was doing. And so I love listening to him, and like Max Howard would always give me great tips as well.
Right.
So those are the ones that I tell these young guys. I say, get in with these people, let them learn from these people. You don't got to take everything from them, but if they got some information for you, at least listen to it.
People actually are consultants, and they are paid good money for people to give them these kinds of valuable tips that you can learn for free by hanging out at a convention, just being around them.
It was one of my first times performing at the Castle, and it was Carl Ballantyne, I think it was. And he was sitting in the back smoking his cigar in the back of the parlor. And it was Billy McComb. That's who it was, Billy McComb. Mm-hmm. And I was doing the sponge ball effect when the person opens their hand, 20, 30 sponge balls comes out of their hand, and they would all fall all onto the floor, onto the table, and just make a big mess. And he sat there and sat there and sat there until the room cleared out, and he walked down, and he goes, with his accent that he had, he come down, Scotty boy, you know, he brings this piece of rope around his neck. He goes, use this rope, and he puts the rope down the table, have them open their hand, and when the balls open their hand, the balls will go right to the edge of the rope and never fall off. And he goes, do that. I said, okay. So 35, 45 minutes later, I do my other show. He comes walking back into his reserve seat, sleeps for the better part of the show, and then when that part comes for the sponge balls, I do it. He just gets a big kick, and he's like, ah, yes, yes. So these older gentlemen, they like to give their wisdom, and I say take it. If they've got a gym for you, take it and glean from it, man.
Yeah.
It's awesome stuff.
Well, you know, when you and I first got to be such good friends, we were actually working with Dodd Vickers, had the Magic Newswire, and we
right.
were then on there and doing some convention reports, and we were submitting them to him. So that was and still available. The Magic Newswire out there has a lot of great conversations. In his case, that they are really archives, truly, of conversations where that he was exploring their history and talking with so many people about what they have done and how they got to where they are. And he is a good interviewer. So it's really, I believe, mine is more conversational and his was more interview style, I would say.
Sure.
But yeah, we started doing. You and I were at the same convention, and then we would put the thing together and send our tapes to him, basically, and he would edit the things together. And but
yeah,
that's whenever that he kind of kicked me out of the nest after a while, because he said, well, I really don't want the Magic Newswire to be all about conventions. I think that you should have your own podcast, and kind of kick me out of the nest, so to speak. So that's whenever I started my own back in 2011. So I can't believe it's taken me this long, actually, to come back around over to you after all these years to finally
You and I have spoken at conventions and
several
when you're going around doing your reports and stuff. But yeah,
yes.
I am honored to be on your podcast. You've done so. If they're going to listen to news or any kind of stuff, you got to go to Scott's podcast. I mean, you're the guy. You're the only guy now, I think, right?
Well, there are a few other magic podcasts that are out there. Mine is the only one that has what I do. I mean, for an example, I know Shazam, that is with Kayla Drescher and Carissa Hendricks,
right.
Is really women in magic, and with a bunch of different
right.
ideas. And there are a couple other podcasts around that are kind of interview style, or perhaps it might be more business related, in which they have a specific topic, they talk with somebody, and I believe you and I have both been on some of those in which they've specifically asked about. Like me about trade shows, or you about kids magic, or whatever kind of a thing. So yeah, but none that have been on as long as we have with 600 episodes or so, you know, over about 10 years. So
I think you got a beat there. I think you got a beat. Well, I guess the next thing that comes up for me is that, you know, we got the IBM. Hopefully we'll get that in this year, and I get to, you know, Stephen Bergazzi is our current president, and then I'll become president this year, and mm-hmm. You know, I'm excited. You know, I would
say. What
plans
do you have?
It's a good idea. You know what I want to do? Because you've got a year, and mm-hmm. what I wanted to see happen is, one, I want to see the membership. Obviously, I want to see it grow. Now, how can it grow? We got to first, if you look at the numbers of IBM, and this is for any like SEM, I can't really speak of them, but I can only imagine it's the same thing. You know, we don't have a lot of young people in it, and I mean we don't have 20s and 30 year olds. That are members, and we've got to get that number up so they can go with us for the longevity. Right mm-hmm. now, our big numbers are anywhere from 60 to 70 is our major number that we have. So we've got to open up. Now, I realize that nothing's really changed if you think about it, Scott, because when I was a kid at 14, I was maybe one of two kids that was at a convention. So I don't think anything's changed since the 80s. There's still not as many kids as there were then at these going to these conventions. So. Mm-hmm. But we got to get more membership drive in there. And I want to try this. I would love to make it where we can make all the organizations work together. We can mend bridges of magicians who, you know, don't talk to each other. If we can somehow mend those bridges mm-hmm. of people, I would love to see people who are not talking to each other for one reason or another in magic industry. It's such a small industry, but if I could somehow mend bridges and let people just, hey, this is magic, people. We're just doing magic. I know some people are making a lot of money and doing great things, and there's some, you know, lawsuits that were made. But my thing is, I want to see people get along and enjoy magic and get back to it. And you can enjoy magic as much as you want on YouTube, but the experience is in person. You know, go to your local club and really, go out and support your local magic club. instead of watching things online or, you know, YouTubing things. I just think that there's something to be said that you can't get right here in a square box TV where you can get in person. Mm-hmm. You can't meet those J.C. Doties and stuff. So, and also, I want to work on, I'm working with Oscar Munoz on this, is that I want to make the membership pay. So if you pay $85 a year, I want it to pay. I want, in other words, if you bought something from Penguin, you're going to get maybe 15% discount just by using your IBM number. Hmm. You know, and maybe you can use that Delta. Maybe Delta can give you 15% off by using your IBM number. I want to get sponsors where they can come in and say, all right, yeah, we'll give your group this amount off if they just give us their number. So I want the thing to pay for itself. And the idea came from where I get my haircut from. They sell those cards. The Cub Scouts or the Boy Scouts sell those cards that have these different sponsors on this card. And you can go to this restaurant and they'll give you, you know, free garlic knots or 10% off their bill. But the card's only $5. So just by using that card one time, you pay for itself.
Right.
So I kind of want it to be where the membership doesn't cost anything.
Because of the benefits you get.
Bucks. Yeah, you get all these benefits. So I want to make it a big, big benefit and not just make it, oh, you get a Lincoln Ring magazine. And they go, that's it? You know, obviously, you and I know there's a lot more to it than just a Lincoln Ring that you get. But I want to make it look like you get a ton of stuff. So that's kind of what I want to work on and just, you know, get as many young people. I know that Lance Bird and that team has been trying to get as many young juniors involved in Magic. But sometimes these young kids don't have the money or the funds to go to these things. And that's why IBM is doing the thing where they're actually, we're letting the kids come to the convention for free. You know, you just got to have an adult there with you. But they don't have to pay any kind of registration fee, which I think is kind of nice. So that's something we started last year, but unfortunately the convention didn't happen last year. So it's something that we will keep trying to do. If it works, we're going to keep at that.
I know that the Magi Fest, I keep going back to that as well, about how that Josh and Andy are really creating new things all the time, and they've got basically a scholarship fund. In other words, that whenever that you register for the convention, there's a little box that says, would you like to donate X dollars
sure.
towards paying for a youth to attend, kind of a thing, or to helping to offset their expenses, that we can give them X dollars if they will show up or whatever. So that might be yet another idea for members helping
yeah.
to expand the membership.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, I want to just see some good things. I mean, I think the IBM is in a good place. We've got some new people coming up behind us, and you know, I don't think it's the same, and it's good. I want to see other people get involved. I mean, I beg people, hey, get involved. You know, if you got an idea, get involved. It shouldn't be the same people. You know, I mean, how many years you and Stratman run, you know, the convention?
Too many.
I mean, I don't want to run it, you know,
yeah.
that many years. I can tell you that. Let other people jump up. I mean, if you can work well with a group and you can manage a group, by all means, step up allow your voice to be heard and tell them what you want to do, because IBM is looking for people like you.
The biggest expense, I'm sure, for both the SAM and the IBM are the hard copies of the magazine, and also that the journals are the backbone. Just as you said, that for years that's been like the most visible benefit. And I know also that advertising in both magazines in general and newspapers and whatnot have been cutting back and back and back as people go more
sure.
towards online, et cetera.
Yeah.
So is there anything that you are thinking of or looking at doing in trying to monetize that a little bit better into the Linking Ring, or to having more of that content being online? I mean, I know, for an example, like the MUM, if you are a life member, that you only will receive the magazine virtually. You can digitally, I should say. The Linking Ring, I think there's that option, but that's not something that they force us as life members to accept the way that the SAM has. Do you have any thoughts? I mean, being on the board and things they've talked about that you can share?
Excuse me. Yeah. So the magazine already is in PDF form for the Linking Ring. You
yes.
can get that, and you can view them. Even if you get the hard copy, you can still go back and look at copies online
right.
as a member. That's a perk for that. Having said that, I did a lecture in D.C. for a junior group, and these kids were junior members of the IBM Ring. And I asked them about the Linking Ring. I said, "What is your? Do you have a particular story you like to read every month?" And several of the kids, the juniors, never read them. Mm. So that's disappointing to find out that a lot of people. It's not even the plastic's not even getting cracked off, you know, mm-hmm. the book. And that's a little disappointing, because there are some great little nuggets in these books.
Sure.
So So I think Sammy does a great job. I mean, does that mean we need to change up things in that? I don't know. Maybe so. But we've got to figure out how to get these things cracked open and be read and see the value of this magazine. And we got to figure that out. And once that happens, once you see that we get more readership and then obviously more people coming in and registering and becoming members of IBM, then you're going to see your advertising dollars go back up. You're going to see people wanting to advertise more in there as you get more people looking at the magazine. But I think right now we don't have a lot of people. Now, our older generation people, if you try to tell them, hey, you can look at a PDF, they're like, what? They've got to have a hard copy.
Yeah.
So the hard copy is more for them, and the other copy, I think if you don't have a hard copy, you might not go and look at it. I mean, I'm still behind on Cosmos Real. I'm
Real
still
Magic.
Behind.
I'm
like five discs behind right now. Mm-hmm. You know, where the Lincoln Ring comes in, I'll crack it open and flip through it and, you know, read the stuff I need to read. So there is something to say once it's in the PDF format or it's online, you kind of say, oh, I've got time. I've got
right.
time. Then you find yourself, you get bogged down. So
one of the things that Genie Magazine did for a long time, I thought was a brilliant idea, was in their poly bag that there would be a DVD that may be something from a dealer that was basically just a bunch of demos or something, or it could be an explanation of one or two tricks or something, which was great. But the point is that it made you want to open the bag and watch the DVD. So if there was like a three-card Monty or something that was in the poly bag that could be blown in there as well, that would encourage people to say, I wonder what this is this month that's a little prize that you get as a benefit or something with the magazine.
Right.
Or something that perhaps might relate to the parade in the middle, so that you've got a parade that has a trick that says you need to download this or to print this out. Well, what if it was already downloaded and printed and included in the bag? So this way that you had to then go through and read the trick to use that that gimmick. Just a thought.
I've always loved that principle. Like, I know when Magic Magazine used to put little tricks inside the book. I think it was Mom would have like little cardboard things in there you'd have to tear apart. That was always really good.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I've told Bergazzi that I think we should consider doing is making the Lincoln Ring like an Easter egg, like hiding something in there that of value. Like there might be a free registration to the IBM convention, but you've got to find it. It's not going to be in every book,
mm-hmm.
but it's going to be in one of these books, and they've got to find it. And they find it. It's a free registration. Just things like that. And I think you could do that every month doing, you know, fun games like that where they've got to find these things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's where you get a free IBM membership, or maybe it's that you give a free, maybe you get a free one and you can get, then you got to sign someone up. You got to get someone else signed up in order for you to get this. So just things like that.
Or making one of the months perhaps into a book test so that the magazine can actually be used and you flip through it and it could be a book test.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, that's Sammy. Are you listening? Sammy's like,
I mean, those are things that you cannot do with Vanish magazine. Vanish and others that are digital are great, certainly. But I think that in order to have value for the hard copy, that there needs to be something that you get out of it, that you'd want to keep it and use it and whatever then as well. Well, listen, also about real quickly as we start to wrap up over here on kid shows and things, would you say that most of your business is with school shows, library shows, or birthday parties, or what would be like equal parts? What do you do mainly?
Yeah, so I would say mostly mine is school shows and libraries, but
elementary schools or high schools?
Yeah, elementary with an educational thing, but I have never let go of birthday parties. I still do them. I don't do as many as I used to,
mm-hmm.
but I still do them because it's hard to say no to $350 for like a 45-minute show.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, it's kind of like my security blanket, if that makes sense. You know, in 2008 when we kind of hit a recession, I wasn't getting many schools. I wasn't getting many corporation shows, but birthday parties were still coming in because parents aren't going to skip on their kids.
Right.
So I was still booking pretty regularly on the kid show. So I kind of like doing the birthday parties still as a security blanket and doing, you know, maybe two or three a weekend and, you know, making another $1,100 a weekend mm-hmm. just doing birthday parties. So it's a crutch for me, but it's one that I think is a slight security blanket for me. And I, you know, I still do corporate. I mean, that's one thing I pride myself on is that I'm one of those guys that can pull off a kid show and then a mom or dad be at that kid show and go, you know what, would you do our corporate show for us for our company party? Because they enjoyed it that much
mm-hmm.
that I've written the show that much that they think, hey, I think we would enjoy it even without the kids.
Right.
So that's kind of how I've gone over the last 15 years, is to make sure the show is enjoyed by the adults. So I'm doing quite a bit of a corporate work. So yeah, it's, I don't want to say I'm a man for all, but I know my limitations, but I'll do a corporate show any day of the week.
Right. And the things that you're doing then for the school shows and libraries, again, that you can make those kinds of contacts with a larger group of people then, too, that, again, might see you, whether it's a teachers association or the PTA or something,
yeah,
that might, whatever, see you. And I think, again, business begets more business. And you also need to find where your strengths are, because they don't want this to be childish, and they recognize that, hey, this is a solid scripted show, and they could do something, he could do something then for us. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying. And so,
yeah, I mean, when I put the show together, it really is, I kind of say it's kind of Pixar. It's kind of like, I'm not going to say anything dirty, but mm-hmm. I may have an innuendo to let you finish it in your mind as a
right.
parent. And I'm, you know, I'll make it fun. I really like to, I write my show for the adult first and the kid comes second, which I know is probably in reverse, but I really write it first for the adult and then have the birthday kid or the kids that are going to be there. They're my second target, because I know if I can impress the adult, the kid's probably going to be impressed too. But
right.
if the kid's impressed, the adult's not impressed, they're just easily amused, then I don't know that they're going to remember me. So, but if I can crack that nut first with a parent, that's going to open more doors than just me, you know, in entertaining the kids. But obviously I want to entertain the kids because they are why I'm there. But at the end of the day, the kid's not booking me. The parent is. And the parent's not going to tell their neighbor, hey, you got to get Ken Scott. It was so funny.
Yeah.
So that's something, that's kind of how I work my business, is to go for the adult and then the kid, which is, I probably would be, well, that's backwards, but hey.
I just heard something recently that Avner the Eccentric had said, and that is that you should be interested and not interesting. And that kind of, yeah, makes you think, well, I want to be interesting so people will remember. But on the other hand, that if you are interested, in other words, you are interested in the prop, in something that you're holding or whatever that the moment is you are invested in focusing on that and you're interested in what's happening, the focus of the audience will be on that, whatever you're interested in then too. And then you become more interesting because you are interested. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yes.
And it's just a different perspective. And I thought, well, that's kind of brilliant. And by doing that, then you, by being interested and you bring in more people, then that's when I think that not just the youth, but also the adults will say, man, I like that. He was really an interesting guy. And,
yeah.
But I don't know why necessarily, but it was because you were interested in what you were doing. So they want to hire you to do their show then too. So that makes sense.
And if I could give a tip, I would say be as easy as you can to work with. I mean, there are, I read on Facebook and some of our groups where, you know, hey, if a guy skips out on you, if you don't get a deposit, this and that, and you make clients jump through hoops. My take is I've rarely been screwed on shows. I can count them on one hand in 20 plus years, but I'm very easy to work with. I think that pays off a lot for me,
mm-hmm.
And it builds relationships. I think when you're in this business, I often hear people go, my customer. Well, I don't like to call them customers. I call them clients that become friends,
mm-hmm.
Because those are the guys, when you get clients and friends, they're the ones that's going to push you, and you're going to get most of your work from these people.
That's right.
A customer, I consider a one-time thing. You're going to get a customer, and they're going to be a one-time shopper. But make it easy for them. I heard guys say, if they don't, you know, if they don't have my parking spot, if they don't have my deposit, I'm not performing. Well, you know, you can have all that down, but the bottom line is, if you do that, you've pissed off, you know, a mom or mm-hmm. an organization or a school. They're not going to have you back, and they're going to talk bad. And sadly, they're going to, you know, this from when we used to do those survey monkeys on for conventions. We would mm-hmm. ask questions. We'd always get negatives. Like, where's all the positive? We'd had a great convention. You know, unfortunately, you're going to get a lot of negative comments when you do bad things. And you're going to get a lot more of those than you do positive if you do good things. So I just try to keep it easy to work with and make sure that you become friends with your clients, because they want to recommend their friends. And that's kind of how I've grown my business over the years, is to make sure that I keep in touch with them. They know that I've got a family. I know they got a family. And, you know, it's just, that's the way I think business is ran when you're running a small business.
No, I agree. You know, business begets business, and people like to do business with friends also. And if you can convert a client into a friend, where that you're actually receiving Christmas cards from them before you even send one out to them, you know, that shows that they are considering you as part of their family and friends that they want to do business with then as well. So, yeah, good advice.
I know we talked about we want to make sure this could be listened to years ahead, but, you know, this year that we're in, I had a client send me money. He just sent me money because I've been working for him for 18 years. Mm-hmm. He just sent me money in March, unbeknownst to me, and I'm like, wow. And I cried because, you know, he just – that's what he thought. He goes, you've put so much laughs in my family. This is the least I could pay you. And I was just – that's what I want to create is those kind of people who care about you even in the bad times. So,
right.
And that's truly happened. So
that's true. Well, as we wrap up over here, of course, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast. And so what is your phrase? What's your philosophy of life? What's your magic word or words?
A magic word. My magic word is just keep doing what you're doing and always be open for suggestion. Don't stay. Don't become complacent in where you are. Mm-hmm. You know, I see so many people out there who are doing the same stuff, and they never change. So if you're doing, I see some of my friends who have the same headshot from the 1980s that are still working it to this day. You know, change up your business, change up your look, change up your logo if you have to. Just stay fresh. Stay fresh and don't become complacent. You know, it's very easy to become complacent that you get so busy that you forget that people are behind you. They can pass you. And so just don't become complacent and change up things. Make it fresh. And for nothing else, make it fresh for you. Because, you know, I add things to my show so often just so I won't be bored. And when you're not bored, the audience is pretty much not going to be bored as well. So
good advice. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. They can.
And to you, Scott, I tell you, and I applaud you, Scott. You took the dogs over there, and I thought that was Zadie Blaney. Mm-hmm. You took those dogs 1,000 miles, and I heard about that story, and I know you hate getting those kind of praises, but I just applaud you for that. That was a great thing, and I know that Begonia
Sean Begonia,
right?
Right, Sean Begonia was one.
He got them, and I think he was just in awe, and I think he's just so delighted that he got them. But, man, what a great thing you did for Walter, for one thing, and then for those dogs.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your comments. That was Walter was special to me, and he's going to be buried in Colon, and I have purchased a plot next to his as well. So we'll be up there together.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, listen, thanks very much. That's good advice, good words that you've shared with us throughout this past hour and also for us to go forward with your magic words then as well. Yeah, don't be complacent. I like that very much. Ken, thanks again. Appreciate you all your
Scott,
friendship.
Thank you very much. And to your listeners, thank you to all your listeners. And if you keep listening, there might be an Easter egg in this somewhere that you can get some deals somewhere. I don't know. I don't know. We'll figure something out. Make sure you go to IBMconvention.com and AtlantaHarvest.com.
And magician.org also for
magician.org, exactly. We would love to have you at the IBM convention, and I would love to have you at my convention in Atlanta in October, the Atlanta Harvest of Magic. So Scott, make sure you have you guys come out, and we'll have a whole session with you interviewing people.
There we go. I look forward to that. That'll be so much fun. Thanks again. And so with the Magic Word Podcast, that was Ken Scott. This is Scotty out. Thank you very much, Ken. I appreciate you being my guest this week on the Magic Word Podcast. It was wonderful catching up with you, and I don't know why it has been so long for us to actually get together for an entire episode that has featured you. I mean, we've been doing this for 10 years, and we've been friends for so much longer. But so glad that you were able to share those comments with the listeners and with me. I enjoyed our time to catch up. And also, I want to thank you very much for offering the free registration for the upcoming convention. That will be for the Atlanta Harvest of Magic that is currently planned to take place on September 30th through October the 2nd of 2021. So if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you will find a form which you fill out with your name and email address. And if your name is randomly selected, then you will win one adult registration for the Atlanta Harvest of Magic here for this year. If for some reason that gets postponed, then that will go into the next year then as well. there is no cash value for this registration. So if it is not held, that doesn't mean that you'll be receiving a refund since you had nothing invested in this except just your time for completing that registration. So again, go there and we will draw that name in about 2 weeks from now. And good luck to you. Well, that kind of wraps up what we've been doing here this week. We've got quite a few more people to talk to over the next few weeks, but only just a few before we finally reach episode number 600. And it's going to be a special one that I know you will want to come back and listen and enjoy. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember, don't become complacent with where you are. Remember, stay fresh, my friends. This is Scotty out.